Good morning, Maggie.
Good morning, Brian. How are you today?
Oh, I am chipper.
That's excellent.
I don't know if that means I'm a chipmunk, but I'm chipper.
Well, very, very well said then.
Yes, yes. Absolutely. You ready for your question?
Oh, always.
All right. Why is it a practice based upon general experience to be calling or referencing something the rule of thumb?
Ooh, because I'm going to say originally that was the measurement, that people use their thumb as the standard way to measure things.
Ding, 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 ding. Yes. Oh, you were like 100%. We got to get a sound effect, Winston, where like something, when they get it right.
Oh,
you know,
my gosh. I think this is the first time I've ever gotten one of these right, Brian.
Rowdy cheers.
I'm going to go home and call the day a win. Right,
yeah. The thumb has been used frequently as a means of measuring approximate measurements. Clothiers and carpenters used it to measure 1 inch, and cooks and brewers used it to test the temperature of heated liquids. Measurements made this way were said to be made according to the rule of thumb. In general use, the expression has been expanded to include any measurement or procedure on practice or experience rather than scientific knowledge.
Wow.
You nailed it.
Good.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Well, you're not going to declare your running for office again today also, are you? I mean, if you got this positive trend going.
Exactly. Winner.
Yeah. It's over. Oh, boy. So are you seeing any ripples in the pond for or associated with the recall?
So, you know, that's a really good question, Brian, because I don't know if there's a cause and effect at all. I know that right now we've got some really interesting, bills going through our state that has caused a lot of concern, you know, for the DA's Association. I was talking to our assemblyman, Jim Wood, over the weekend, just trying to sort of impress upon people the dangerousness of these decisions that sometimes I think people go, oh, that sounds good, and then they don't really recognize just how dangerous it is. And he said he appreciated, you know, that I reached out to kind of highlight for him what we see, you know, here in the courts and in our communities based upon what people are doing, you know, pen to paper in Sacramento. And the latest one is this bail measure they have where I heard that they were voting last night. They've been, you know, sort of going back and forth on it for a little bit. But it's the idea that the court is going to look at whether or not someone has the means to pay when setting bail. But, of course, what we know is there's so many ways to avoid actually showing your worth. So it's like a twofold question for me. For me, I'm like, I would just say if you're a repeat offender, if you're recently, you know, committed serious violent crimes, if this is a serious or violent crime, you should just be held. If we want to consider bail for the petty theft, who maybe it's their one and only time, that's a different situation altogether. But the issue that we're seeing is, you know, and Sacramento's a good example. We had a man who was early released from prison. And you and I talked about that, I think, last time. We've got a lawsuit with the California Department of Corrections on this. He got out and he committed more crimes in June and then was released because of zero bail. He went out and he just sexually assaulted and then murdered a 61-year-old Sacramento woman on September 3rd. And those are there's really no rhyme or reason to how they're calculating who gets in and who gets out, and it's really become a very, very big concern. And so this bill is not a good way to address it at all.
Has there been any change in attitude? And if I was there, I would think that I would either have myself or senior staff, since I would we would have all the fancy phone numbers, to call. Yeah, okay, if there are four or five district attorneys in the jurisdiction, I'm going to call at least three of them and say, what do you think about this? Here's what I see. What are your thoughts? Give me some feedback on this. And kind of like I guess it would be called thinking independently rather than being a sheeple and just going with the herd. Does that not happen?
Right. and I think it's, I think that's a really good question. I think it kind of works the reverse. Like, it's on us to try to reach out, sort of like it is for citizens, you know, try to reach out and impress. I, particularly with the changes in criminal law, it's such a concern because I've watched some of the hearings, and it's really clear that, you know, most of these people have never ever practiced law. They've never ever been in a courtroom. They don't understand the ramifications. But it's also an idea of these radical changes to reduce, you know, sentences. They really should be looked at in terms of what's the violence, what's the seriousness. Those are some of the concerns. So, for example, changing how credits are calculated has a really serious effect. And for us, it's really hard because I'm stuck trying to explain to victims, you know, when the person was sentenced and we said, okay, he's going to do this much time, and then they get out early. I know we talked about it last time, CDCR, our lawsuit is based upon, they just changed how everybody's getting credits, and we have well over 300 people who were sentenced from Humboldt County who got out early and completely, you know, in contradiction of what was calculated and what was negotiated and what victims approved of. It's gone, you know, and many of them have reoffended, obviously. You know, they're back in the community, and we went through to try to figure out how many of these people we now see, and it's dramatic.
So I guess if I had a staff that was, what do they do if they're not reaching out to find out and get input? Sitting around and just, you know, making sure everybody has lunch on time? I mean, how can they fill their day?
Yeah, they have hearings. And obviously we have, the District Attorneys Association have a number of advocates who work, lobbyists who work. And so they, you know, participate in these hearings. They reach out to us, you know.
Well, and we're gonna reach out right now and throw a commercial break in, and then we'll be back.
Listen to 980 AM for the best music, ABBA, Neil Diamond, Barbara Streisand, Billy Joel, and the Fifth Dimension. The all-time best are heard every day, all day long on 980 AM. We are easy radio, easy on your ears and easy on your mind. This is memory-making music, and you'll love the memories you create. Tune in and hear the best music, easy radio, 980 AM.
KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:24. We are back this morning with Humboldt County District Attorney Maggie Fleming. Maggie, with any of these decisions that occur, are most of the impacts predictable, or do you see something that goes through that's voted on and you go, well, okay, I kind of understand, and then you get blindsided by what the impacts are? Or vice versa, you're really, really, really concerned, and it turns out to be kind of a good thing.
You know, Brian, that's a good point. I would say in general, the impacts are very predictable. There have been a couple times when I thought, that's a good outcome. It's interesting. We have this sort of, philosophical dilemma that we're confronted with daily. And it's what we're seeing with our legislative changes. And that is, what is the right consequence, right? Is it too much? Is it too harsh? Is it too punitive? Or is it appropriate? And I think for most of us, we line up on the, if someone's a public safety danger, if there's someone who's going to harm another person, then the consequences should be much steeper. In fact, I just recently, it's been a couple of years now that I met with her first, but I just recently found out we were part of 8 counties that have received funding. I met with this woman who runs a program where she looks at prisoners who have served a significant amount of their time, and I'm talking about 25, 30 years, who maybe still have many, many years to go, but who have changed their life in prison, and would we consider looking at them as candidates for early release? So I met with her, like I say, about 2 years ago. We discussed it, and I said, number one, I kind of doubt there are many of those people from Humboldt County, because we've never really been, you know, like some counties always did three strikes. They always imposed the maximum. We were never really that county, and I've, you know, now worked here over 25 years on, you know, the... So.
Yeah, had to check off on that one, huh?
Well, I was about to say how many DAs I've worked for, and then I had to pause on that one, because I was thinking about it, because, of course, I started in Contra Costa. But, so I said, I would love to be, you know, one of your test case or, you know, test counties. Anyway, the legislators decided to put funding behind it, because it is a huge amount of work. You know, we have to go through lists and then look at their records. So Humboldt County is one of the counties that was awarded this, and it will help us, you know, fund a position. And part of the idea that I think is really appropriate is to evaluate the individual, right? So if they've turned their life around, if they have spent the last 25 years in prison, you know, doing programs, working with groups, you know, trying to get people to stay out of gangs, absolutely. That's someone who I think, you know, they're 55 years old, they've changed their life. Let's look at them as the person who maybe should be given the opportunity of release versus having these broad sweeping changes that say, oh, everybody who's done this much time is going to get out. It's like, well, no, you have to look at who they are, what their record is, and have they changed? Because as we, you know, just saw over the weekend in Sacramento, there are a lot of people who, when you look at them, you could say, I don't think that person should be out of custody. And that's the issue, is that right now, people are so concerned, you know, with this term mass incarceration, that it's almost like nobody should go to prison. Well, that's not accurate. Right now, only serious and violent offenders go to prison. And I think, you know, people in the community who know this would say, yeah, I think that's appropriate. Not everybody goes, not everybody should go, but the people who are terrorizing us, who make people feel unsafe day in and day out, those people should have a very serious consequence, and that's called prison.
I would suspect that any time that there are absolute values, all, none, that should be a flag and a flare and all kinds of concern about whatever it is, because
exactly.
It doesn't make for any allowances.
And, you know, it just goes back to, you know, how most of us were raised, is your parents gave you a consequence based upon, you know, the nature of this offense and what they knew you had recently done, right? It's like, okay, this is the first time you've ever done this, you know, here's your punishment. But, you know, for the person who had done it a couple of times, you know, that it went up. It was a little more harsh. It was, you've now lost driving privileges. You've now lost this. There was sort of that attitude, and that is one thing. You know, they've now said we can't use prison priors, not strike priors. Those are still there, but prison priors. So the person who has been to prison five or six times in the last 10 years, each one of those prison priors could potentially add 1 year, okay? I think everybody says that makes sense, right? If you are our chronic, you know, character who we just see over and over, your consequence should go up over time. That's gone. And these are the changes that I think, well, I kind of do think some people, and again, we didn't always impose it, you know, but for the person who you really did see chronically, there had to be a more increased penalty, or else we're just seeing that person right back out doing it again. There was nothing changing their behavior.
Well, it sounds like you lost a tool or an opportunity, a flexibility,
right.
And I think that probably is an awful lot of the frustration that people have.
Right.
On the outside, right. Looking in, is that everybody is kind of being treated the same, or one size fits all, or we'll just stuff you into that mold and make you fit.
Right. And they forget that we do have a lot of options at every step. So you can have the person who, you know, in his early 20s, went to prison, and now he's 30 and he's reoffended. But now he says, wait, you know, I want to address my substance abuse. We can still do that. We
right.
can say, okay, you know, that you're going to have this moment where you say, I want to change the path I'm on, we can still use all those other programs. We don't have to look at your past and say, nope, sorry. But to have taken away that option completely for the person who, like I say, it's just, you know, the day he gets out of prison, he's going to reoffend. It just seems
crazy.
Like you say, all or nothing doesn't ever work. And we're watching the results now. We're watching the increased violence. We're watching the increased crime.
We're watching our clock also. It's 8:30.
Something big.
Okay, it's a nice ride.
It's going to happen.
Stand by playback.
And now.
Live. Meet Radio.
I keep forgetting I'm president.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
And these kids who come, they become Americans before a lot of Americans become Americans.
Now, here's your host, Lars Larson.
Hey there, it's Lars Larson. Join me for the Lars Larson Show, weeknights 10 to midnight. Honestly provocative talk radio on KINS.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Time. It's 8:36. We're back with Maggie Fleming. Maggie, the question I think a lot of us have got with some of this legislation that occurs that we've been referencing in the show, where's it coming from? Is this like the advocates for rights of the criminally charged or some other groups like that? It seems like, at least from our perspectives, that society is getting chipped away, and there's no consequence for a lot of these behaviors and a lot of these actions if they're recidivist, if they aren't acting right, et cetera, if they're not participating in society. Those are the ones that you want to get out of society rather than turn them back sooner.
Brian, it comes from various groups. It's interesting because I do think it's, you know, sort of the result of there was, you know, a period of time where there was very few consequences, and then, you know, we had three strikes put in place, and then there was, sadly, I think some people, you know, it was overused, and then we saw a lot of people go, well, wait a minute, maybe that's not right. And so it's now swinging back the other way, but I think it's gone too far, you know, obviously. And again, you know, here in Humboldt, we didn't really ever use it that way. I mean, in my mind, I have a hard time imagining or remembering any time when we actually used three strikes. So, you know, unless it was a really serious violent offender, but we never did it on general felonies. So it's just sort of an interesting issue where, you know, I mean, part of why the DAs are local and elected by the local population is because you're a reflection of your community. And I think most people in Humboldt County say, you know, people deserve another chance unless they're being serious and dangerous and affecting our feelings of safety. So it's an interesting issue because I do think some of it comes from that. You know, granted, our prisons were too full and overcrowded, but now they've gone to, you know, this release that we're at a very low population now, and those who are there are very, very violent individuals and should not be getting extra credits and released early without really carefully evaluating who they are. Kind of like we've talked about what we do at a parole hearing when someone comes up for parole. You go through their prison records and you go, wait a minute, this is someone who's, you know, involved in fights, he's been caught with a weapon, he's, you know, using drugs and providing drugs to other inmates. I mean, that's what you got to do. You have to go through and carefully evaluate, does this person deserve the opportunity to be back out right now? And if the answer to that is no, then you have to say no, you don't get out. But to have the all or nothing rule, you know, everybody is going to get this many credits as of today, that's why the DAs are suing the Department of Corrections, because you just can't keep doing this and expect victims and communities you know, to tolerate it and accept it.
Or not to be impacted by it as well. Is there been any movement at all about building more prisons? Because it seems as if the state tries to wash its hands of the responsibility, pushing it down to the counties to deal with. And as a consequence, then not only is the jail full, but you're now in a position where, or we are all, I guess, in the position where misdemeanor offenses never make it in. So, you know, knock your socks off, guys. There's really not going to be any consequence for any of the deviant behavior that you decide that you want to engage in.
That's right. That's right. But no, they're actually closing prisons. So
compounding the situation then.
Right, I know. Well, you know, it's interesting because, of course, it's sort of that thing of so many people have gotten out now, the prison population's so low, they don't need so many prisons. So, you know, I mean, we can we could do that and, you know, have nobody in prison and shut them all if we wanted to go that way. But, yeah, so Lassen County, you know, which sadly has been experiencing horrific fires now since I think it was July 4th, they were told late spring one of their prisons was going to be closed. Of course, those are also the ones where we have, you know, pretty good fire camps. So it's one of the more modern ones, which, again, is something we all question. Why would you close that one when, you know, like San Quentin is literally falling down around itself? But I do recognize, you know, particularly in this community, the fact that our jail population is now impacted by the number of people who used to go to prison who are now housed at our jail means there's just no room to handle the chronic misdemeanors that people really do feel the effects from. You know, the petty thieves, those individuals who really, you know, the ones, I mean, we have people now who have 6 or 7 open files. That's insanity, right? And that's just a cause and effect from nothing's happening to them, so they just keep reoffending.
Is there any?
I mean, right now, if you're on misdemeanor, if you commit a misdemeanor, Brian, you're placed on misdemeanor probation. There's no supervision with that, and the term of your probation is obey all laws.
Well, that's kind of like a get out of jail free card.
That's exactly. Right. And that is what we're supposed to be doing as citizens, obeying all laws.
Right.
So and you know, if I have a thief, we say stay out of, you're not allowed to enter, you know, and then we name the stores that they've recently burglarized, whether it be Safeway or the Chevron gas station store or what it is. But that's the hard consequence. And with COVID, you know, we've even had less ability to impact people's behavior. So that's, I think, in part why so many people are, you know, really having a hard time with what's going on, you know.
Is there,
I mean, mom and pop stores talk about they can't really afford the level of theft.
Yeah, is there any ability or flexibility to have low-level detention facilities that wouldn't rise to the level of a prison or a jail, certainly, but would be, I guess, a holding pen? That's not the right word, but the concept is there, where they are maybe out of society for a period of time, maybe like 10 hours a day, 12 hours a day, you know, just something like that, maybe like an old warehouse that isn't being utilized where it's doesn't rise to that level, but there is some kind of consequence?
I don't know that idea has ever really been floated. I mean, I know citizens have reached out to me and floated it, and I've appreciated that, but I don't know that it's really, you know, you think about what all has to be provided. So I don't know. I mean, it's sort of like the Sheriff's Work Alternative Program. I think that's right. A great idea for people to go out and work off their hours, do something, and then they don't sleep at the jail. You know, they're basically committed for a certain amount of hours that they've got to do something. I think that's great. I think part of why sometimes we look at diversion and alternatives is because the idea is maybe helping people understand the consequences of their actions. So, for example, with vandals, we've, you know, said, how about you sign up with the city of Eureka and go clean up graffiti, do these things, you know, something like that to make people sort of go, got it. When I do this, you know, This is how it impacts the person who's building or fence or area I've done this on.
Does it work?
For some it does, you know. I mean, it's kind of like putting people in jail. For some people, it's a really good moment in time where they realize. I mean, I remember I had someone say to me one time, it hit him, I never ever want to be here again. You know, and I thought, hey, then it worked, you know, whether it be 2 days or whatever. But for some, it doesn't work. So,
case by case, right?
Right.
Not in the, it's all-inclusive stuff. KINS, right. News and Information Time, it's 8:45.
Hey, folks, flying local is buying local. And with 3 airlines serving 5 destinations, Humboldt County has more choices than ever. Fly on American, Avelo, or United Airlines. We have service to Denver, Hollywood Burbank, LAX, Phoenix, and San Francisco airports. Now's the time to book and save on that getaway. Or have friends and family fly to visit the beautiful Redwood Coast. For more information, go to flyhumboldt.org. Fly Humboldt, more flights to more destinations.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time's 8:49. We're back talking shop this morning with Maggie Fleming. So how's the day-to-day doing for you?
You know, pretty good. We're still super impressed by jurors are showing up for court. Really thank them. You know, we're not trying as many cases as we did, but we're really focused on the serious and violent cases that we've got. And then I think you and I, maybe last time or the time before, we talked about that sexually violent predator, Joshua Cooley. We were really happy in August. Judge Feeney rescinded his earlier ruling that happened many years ago, actually, where he was going to release Mr. Cooley. The vast majority of the psychotherapists and psychologists and psychiatrists who'd evaluated him thought he should still remain in, but one of them thought he could be returned to public life if there was appropriate housing and appropriate treatment. That couldn't be found, and the organization that was responsible for finding that looked at 7,000 potential sites. They had 7 specific proposals, and I know many community members showed up to let Judge Feeney know how they felt about some of the locations that had been chosen. So just really glad we finally got to that place, because he was someone who was clearly very dangerous, and we were very concerned about having him released until he had actually completed the treatment program that he's supposed to be going through that he will not participate in. So really, I really appreciated the work of the assistant DA here, Stacey Eads, because she went to all of the, she never stopped trying. She kept writing briefs. She kept bringing up the latest information that we had on how he was behaving while he was still in the facility. So just really, she did an amazing job to really make sure the right outcome ended up happening.
Is there anybody else that's on your watch list now that we would recognize?
I don't know. We've got a couple of these other sexually violent predators, but they're still going through the process of being basically housed. So we haven't had anybody recently that the judges have thought should be released, and I'm hoping it stays that way, because it's a very, very significant treatment program. I mean, it's in place for a reason. And what we find is, and it kind of fits their, you know, who these people are, some of them won't participate. They literally have this attitude of, I don't need to do that and I won't do it. And until they recognize what their problem is and that they need treatment to address that problem, they really can't be, you know, released into society.
So they can't be required to do that? It's just a strong suggestion?
Exactly. Right. It's required. I mean, they're at a state hospital specifically for that. Is just whether or not they participate. But again, I don't think people who refuse to participate should ever be considered, you know, somebody that should be released.
So they stay at the hospital instead of at the prison?
Yes, yes.
It's probably an easier existence than it would be in prison, huh?
Well, they have to do their time first.
Oh.
So these are individuals who were sentenced to prison for specific sexual assault type crimes. And then before they're released from prison and paroled, because of the nature of their offenses, they're evaluated by psychiatrists who make a determination. And at that point, we have to have a trial to determine whether or not they should then be transferred to state hospital for this treatment program.
Gotcha.
So that has to happen for someone to be classified as a sexually violent predator. And then once that's found by a judge and jury, then they go to the state hospital and should not be released until they're no longer a danger based upon the treatment program.
Well, hopefully we won't have to be talking too much about this one down the road, this process.
That's right.
Thanks for coming
That's
by.
Right. Thank you, Brian. Have a good day.
Keep smiling. See everybody tomorrow.